rulers of the nations as you fuss and fight over who owns this or that and who has the right to design, build, sell, and store and fire all the bombs and guns to defend your holy empire. There are children hungry, children sick and dying. There are mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers crying. They're only pawns in your play of power and corruption. Slowly starve them, your new weapon of mass destruction. And prove to me, America, that you care. And prove to me, America, you're aware.
From Pacifica Radio, this is a special report, Haiti in Crisis. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! At this hour, the streets of Port-au-Prince are barricaded. President Aristide and his wife, Mildred Aristide, are inside the palace. Armed gangs, paramilitaries are moving closer towards the capital of Port-au-Prince. Reports are that they have seized the town of Mirebalais, only 30 miles away, after taking the southern port of Lékaï, Haiti's third largest city. But it is difficult to determine whether the accuracy of all of this, because there is a major disinformation campaign that is going on. U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell has come very close to telling President Aristide he should bow out as president before his term expires, February 2006. He told reporters whether or not he is able to effectively continue as president is something he will have to examine carefully in the interests of the Haitian people. The Reverend Jesse Jackson, visiting Libya, urged the United States to protect Aristide. Jackson said, unless something happens immediately, the president could be killed. He said, we must not allow that to happen to that democracy. We must give the best troops to Haiti to protect the president's compound. In this hour, we turn to the palace, where I just got off the phone with the First Lady of Haiti, Mildred Aristide. This is the full tape of what she had to say.
Wait, Amy, it's Mildred Aristide.
Hi, thank you very much for calling. Well, why don't we just speak right away, and that is, are you afraid for your life and for your husband's life?
Okay, the situation is quite critical. You know, the thugs and the FRAP and the military who are heavily armed in the north are sending messages repeatedly on the airways in Haiti that they stand ready at any moment to storm Port-au-Prince. And here in Port-au-Prince, the population has erected, I'm looking out the window, lots of barricades along the streets to prevent an attack. Security is at a heightened situation. But the president's resolve is very strong, as he indicated yesterday and through to this morning, that what is important in this moment for Haiti in terms of the future of Haiti is to establish the stability and the political stability that Haiti has never had, and for there to be a continuity in governance from one president to the next.
We are just reading a report that says the Bush administration believes the best way to avoid an armed rebel takeover in Haiti is for Aristide to resign and transfer power to his constitutional successor. This according to an unnamed senior U.S. official. Meanwhile, the Marine Corps indicates it's preparing a possible mission to waters off the coast of Haiti. Any such deployment would be aimed at deterring a potential refugee crisis and protect the 20,000 American citizens in Haiti. Secretary of State Colin Powell signaled that direction. Administration policy and remarks Thursday night, said the U.S. official who discussed the situation only on grounds of anonymity. So here we have for the first time the Bush administration saying that the best way to avoid an armed rebel takeover is for President Aristide to resign. Your comment?
I think that the position being taken by the United States and by other members in the international community that see that as an option is completely antithetical to democracy and to constitutional democracy, and it's a great tragedy, and this will be the achievement of a coup one of many in Haiti's hard and very sad history. We've had 32 coups. This will be the achievement of a coup. This will be the ability of a group of small group, a relatively small group of convicted murderers, drug dealers. This will show their ability to the world that in the face of elections, in the face of a vote of poor black people who voted for a president and voted for a government, it will show their ability to override that supposed democratic authority and be able to seize power in the nation. And I think it is a truly sad day, not only for Haiti, but for the world.
Do you think the United States is behind this coup?
I think that the international community has continuously failed to provide the support necessary to the democratically elected government to, in fact, accomplish its goal of providing an improvement in the lives of Haitians. I think that it has been hiding behind this facade of there is some opposition to the president's policies, and my God, if it wasn't a democracy, you wouldn't hear that. And in fact, what you're hearing in Haiti and have been hearing for 3 years is the ability of the opposition to criticize and to say, we hate Aristide, or we support Aristide, we don't agree with him here, we don't agree with him. That's fine. That's democratic opposition, and that's what any healthy democracy should have. But what we have now is the ability of armed persons, and we must question where are those arms coming from, because Haiti doesn't produce M16s and other automatic weapons that we are seeing slung behind the backs of these people. These are the same people who killed over 5,000 people who have been allowed by some force to come back to Haiti and to continue that reign of terror, and that's what it is. With the complicity of some sectors in the international community, I really don't know. I know that Haiti doesn't produce arms, so it's not homegrown. This is coming from somewhere.
The rebels are saying it's leftover weapons from the Haitian army.
Yeah, and I would guess it's, but it's also being the indications are the volume is also has increased, and so it's got to be beyond the leftover weapons. And if you remember back in 1994, after the president returned, he was emphatic with the international community that not only must the military be disbanded, but it has to be disarmed. And if you remember, too, in 94, that was not done. And FRAP, which was the paramilitary organization, which is now stands convicted, one of the guys who is now in Cape Haitian, Chamblain, he stands convicted in absentia for the murder of Guy Mallory, who was the Minister of Justice in Haiti in 1993, and Antoine Ismidi, and many other persons suspected in the murder of other persons, but convicted of those two high-profile murders. And so now it is clear that it is the same group which has returned and which is bent on producing the same effect. And yet FRAP, in 1994, there was an attempt by the international community to say, no, let's try to fit them into the mold of a opposition or a counterbalance to Lavalas. And therein was the danger, and therein was a seed that was ready to sprout as it has now 10 years later.
Louis Jodel Chamblain, who already was convicted in absentia, has said Aristide has two choices, prison or execution by firing squad. Your response?
What do you respond to something like that? I would ask you to ask the international community and perhaps the United States, what is their response? Is that the strategy that the world is saying is okay to deal with political dissension today in the world? And if that is the case, then it's a sorry day for democracy in the world.
Louis Jodel Chamblain, number two man in the FRAP launched by Emmanuel Constant and U.S. intelligence agencies, as was shown by the investigative journalist Alan Nairn in 1994-1995. Do you believe he is still on the U.S. payroll?
I don't know, and I think that would be better asked maybe from somebody in the administration. I don't know, just to ask the question whether that is so, but I don't know.
We're talking to the First Lady of Haiti, Mildred Aristide. She is in Port-au-Prince right now. It is Friday afternoon. There are barricades all over Port-au-Prince, and the forces, armed forces moving in, say also they have taken the third largest city. What is your understanding at this point, Mildred Aristide?
I don't have information for the city of Kai. I'm truly not informed on that situation because I've been I've kind of been out of pocket this morning making lots of phone calls, so I'm not sure if that is correctly being stated. I do know that there were some armed persons in Kai. Whether they've taken over the city, I'm not sure.
Luigi Del Chamblain said on Radio Metropole, he said, the fight in Port-au-Prince will not even last 1 hour. Actually, at this very moment, we already have control inside the National Palace. He was then asked, how is that? Because you do not have anybody in there. And Chamblain replied, that is what you think. Let me tell you something. The people who are going to help us get him are already with him. Referring, of course, to Aristide.
Yeah, that's part of the psychological warfare that they're engaged in to demoralize further the national police. And you know, this is a cruel way of proving what President Aristide has been saying for the past 3 years, is that the police force, which is severely undermanned, severely under-resourced, under-equipped, is now facing M16s. Automatic rifles and other kinds of heavy armaments without being properly equipped on their end. And so their ability to, in small numbers, and then on top of that, using passersby and children as sorts of human shields, as they did in Gonaive, has meant that the police force has not responded aggressively as they could or as they should in this situation. Now, these questions, I mean, Haiti is fraught with rumors, and that's in normal times, let alone in the times that we are living now, where they said 2 weeks ago that I had left the country, that I had left with my children and all sorts of things, and I was not coming back, and here I am right here in Haiti. I say this, but with a clear understanding and knowledge that, indeed, if forces who are assisting them or if whatever allies that they may have do indeed intend to come to Port-au-Prince, I'm not going to be naive enough to say that it won't happen. What I say is that it will be an abomination, and this is an abomination of all the principles of democracy, and really must make everyone pause to wonder what is democracy and what are we defending in the world when we allow a group of armed terrorists, armed murderers, convicted murderers, and drug dealers to come and overrun a democratically elected government.
Why do you think the U.S. has not intervened until this point, or saying they are waiting for a political settlement?
I truly don't know. I would urge you to be able to get an interview with some appropriate officials in the international community to ask that question, because I can say that on the Haiti side, that we have a direct and recent example in our history, a very recent example in our history. If you remember, Amy, and I know you were following events back in 1993, during the coup d'etat in 1993, that coup d'etat, in July 1993, President Aristide participated in a U.S. brokered agreement called the Governor's Island Agreement. And under that agreement, the president was to return to Haiti in September, at the end of September 1993, and he was to name a new consensus government, new prime minister, new ministers. All of that was done in terms of the naming of a new consensus government. And that government, though, did not have the adequate security to survive or to govern in any effective way in Haiti. There was a steady escalation of violence in August, September, and October, making the president's return impossible and the emergence of FRAP the reality then. And in October, on October 13th, to be specific, 1993, Guy Mallory, who was not a member of La Valasse, but was an honorable Haitian citizen who agreed to partake in this consensus government as the Minister of Justice, he was gunned down in front of his ministry, killed, and the person who stands convicted of his murder is none other than Luigi Del Chamblain, who is today attempting to do the same thing. And when we ask, or when the international community then asks, political settlement first, then security second, then you are condemning anyone who would come forward to the same fate as Mr. Mallory at the hands of the same murderer.
Mildred Aristide, with this same man who has been convicted of the murder of the Justice Minister Guy Mallory, so you know what he's capable of, saying Aristide has two choices, prison or execution by firing squad, why are you both staying right now in Port-au-Prince?
Because right now, the importance in this moment for Haiti is for the establishment of continuity in the democracy. It is no accident that Haiti is the poorest country economically in the Western Hemisphere, and that it is a country whose 200-year history is wrought with instability, 32 coups, and always this notion that if you don't like them, take them out. We saw it most recently in a bloody revolution, coup d'etat in 1991, when after 7 months, President Aristide was deposed and over 5,000 people killed. And so the importance is to say that democracy must survive. Now, if the forces who are speaking now and who have opined and said that democracy cannot go forward and that somehow these thugs can be allowed to overrun the country and come into Port-au-Prince and do what they think they say they can do, that might require another analysis. But right now, the analysis is that democracy has to be saved, or, you know, it is an incredible setback for the country. Although, you know, the president has said that the path and the Haiti's progress, its democratic progress, slow, short, but sure and steady. Population will not sit back, and it may be a question of averting the murder of thousands and thousands and thousands of Haitians. That is the type of violence which will be unleashed, excuse me, if this is allowed to go forward. And it is a question of what do we do at all costs to avert that, because the population has spoken. They will be slaughtered in great numbers if it is allowed to come to that, where the president is forced to leave or if the president is killed.
What is the president doing? What are you doing? What are people doing in the streets now to protect the palace, to hold on to power?
Well, there's a huge security presence here at the palace, and there's a huge mobilization on the streets of Port-au-Prince, where there are a lot of barricades that have been set up to stop any cars. And so there are lots of barricades throughout the city that have been set up really since the day before yesterday and more so last night and tonight. And there are the measures that the government is looking to that and has secured to augment and increase the security capabilities of the police. And for obvious reasons, I won't go into that. I'm not privy to that, but I know that those are going forward.
Are you and President Aristide in the palace now?
Yes, I'm right in my office looking out the window.
Can you leave?
He's in his office. Can I leave? If I chose to leave, I could leave, but I've got a lot of work to do this afternoon, so I'm not leaving right now.
Where do you draw your strength from?
It's from him. You know, perhaps it's because the U.S. has no framework with which to understand a person like Jean-Bertrand Aristide. But this is a person with a mission. You know, he had this mission, as you know, and I know that you know his history. He had this mission as a Catholic priest, as a parish priest in the poorest, poor neighborhoods here in Haiti. And his mission was to uplift his parishioners. And that became expanded when he was asked to be a candidate for president. And the reason that, and you know, the other day in an interview, someone asked me, well, am I shocked by the level of opposition? And I say, no, I am shocked by the depth of the commitment to Aristide that this country still has, because notwithstanding his goodwill and his will to provide for the people of Haiti, he has been greatly handicapped in that ability by the embargo placed on the internet by the international community on Haiti's access to the resources that we need to increase the level of literacy, to increase the level of health care in this country, to increase the number of schools. Notwithstanding that, we have done with our fingers and our hands. The government has made great, significant efforts. In the last 10 years since the restoration of democracy, the number of public high schools built in Haiti has doubled. There have been roads pierced and made in areas there have never been roads. There have been over 50 parks built in Haiti. President Aristide has made electricity a reality for small towns which have never had electricity. The literacy campaign is working to undo or reverse a 75% illiteracy rate. With the cooperation that we have gotten from the Cuban government, we have doctors in areas of the country that have never seen the light of day of a healthcare worker, let alone a doctor. And we are now training over 400 doctors in in schools in Cuba and here in Haiti, thanks to that cooperation. These are the real issues that Haiti needs to confront. These are the real issues that Haitians look to when they decide who will and who will not be their leader. And this is what they will look to when there are the next free and fair elections, which must go forward in November of 2005.
Have you been negotiating with the United States over leaving? And if you are forced out, where you will go?
No. It is, and I won't answer any questions to those lines because we are maintaining the position that I said. That's not an issue right now.
We have heard some reports that there are 1,000 Marines on the ground in Port-au-Prince. Is that true?
On the ground, I just saw the deployment. You know, as reported on Monday or Tuesday, there were 100 Marines that were sent to Haiti. Are there 1,000? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
What about President Bush saying that they will not allow Haitian refugees into the United States?
Well, that's certainly, it's up to President Bush and the United States to determine its policies and its politics with respect to immigration policies. You know, obviously in accord with international standards with respect to refugees fleeing political violence. And I can tell you it has begun. The number of refugees the flight of refugees has begun. And it's not a threat. It's not a warning. It's a reality. You look at the numbers and you look at what happened during the coup d'etat and the steady increase in the number of refugees that were fleeing Haiti during the 3 years of the coup d'etat. Before the coup began in September of 91, there were practically no boat people leaving Haiti. During the 7 months, we had achieved, and that has always been the goal of the president, for the Haitians to stay in Haiti and work here for democracy, for the improvement of our lives, and for the betterment of the people. And that's what the situation was for the 7 months of the beginning of his term. Once the coup happened in September 91, the refugee situation spiraled, and the risk and the lives and the numbers of bodies that washed ashore in Florida, you saw the images, and those images are damning. And they are searing in the minds of all Haitians, and specifically the Haitians who are now in Florida. And now we are faced with the threat of not only that, but with the threat of the thousands and thousands of lives that will be lost if these thugs are allowed to rule the day and say, we have the power and we have the support to be able to move into a country where there is a democratically elected government and decide that we, a minority of armed person, can take control.
We're talking to Mildred Aristide. If I could just briefly ask you how you came to be where you are today, the First Lady of Haiti, having been the counsel for, Father Aristide at the time.
Right. I, along with Ira Kurzban, who's an attorney down in Florida, who is counsel to the government, I worked with the government when it was in exile in Washington in 93 and 94, and then when President Aristide's government was restored, we continued our representation, and we decided to continue here on the ground in Haiti. And I, because I'm of Haitian background, my parents are from Haiti, although I was born in the United States, I decided that I would come to Haiti and continue to work for the government, which I did through 94 and 95. And then President Aristide and I married about 15 days before the end of his first term in January of 1996.
And you've had two children. And how old are they?
7 and 5.
And you've sent them out of the country now?
I did. On Tuesday night, we did hear shooting near the palace. And the girls, the stress was not good for them. And so because my parents are in the United States, I just decided to send them so they're with them.
10 years ago, perhaps 15 years ago, do you think there would have been millions of people in the streets? And are there people in the streets now defending the palace?
Oh, yes. There are people on the streets defending the palace. But, two, you have to know that the arms being borne and the arms that the opposition have are quite significant. And so, you know, it's a very difficult situation. And they are preventing people from coming out, and the threats and the warnings coming on the radio are very significant. But notwithstanding that, there are people out there. There are people out there, and it's a difficult situation.
What do you think could happen right now to prevent the overthrow of the Aristide government?
You know, yesterday he spoke on CNN, and he said it could be as little as a few dozen troops. A strong statement coming from the international community, an unequivocal statement, and a few dozen troops to say that this will not stand. It would only take that to begin the process of stabilizing the situation, to stop the flow of blood now, move towards this political resolution, which is a new consensus government. But as I said, who can come forward in the actual situation? No one. Allow that to go forward and move towards the reforms in the police force that we have been asking for repeatedly for the past 3 years, the professionalization, the better training, the better equipment, et cetera. And therein is the resolution to this crisis here in Haiti. I have to go.
And that was Mildred Aristide, the First Lady of Haiti, speaking to us from the palace in Port-au-Prince. The situation is grave. Armed gangs, paramilitaries are moving in on the capital. And we are going to turn right now to another person on the ground in the capital of Haiti, Port-au-Prince. Kevin Pena joins us. Welcome to this special on Haiti in crisis.
Thank you, Amy. I'm here.
Can you tell us what is happening right now as you understand it? And tell us where you are in relation to the palace where Mildred Aristide was just speaking to us from.
Well, I'm about a mile and a half from the palace. I actually thought about playing a little game on you and attacking Mildred with all of the surrealist lies that all of their opponents have attacked them with, so that you could understand exactly where these people are coming from and just how nasty they really are. They have said so many ugly, nasty things, rumors and lies about the First Lady and the President, especially a press here that they call themselves free and independent. They may be free, but they are not independent at all. They are aligned with the opposition, clearly. They're in their camp. And you can tell it every day that you listen to them. An example is every time there's ever a Lava Lost demonstration, they play music. They never give any coverage. Whenever there's an opposition demonstration, they pay themselves to run advertisements and spots on their radio stations to extol the population against the government. And then they cover everything from A to Z, every chant, every nuance. William Randolph Hearst would blush in comparison to the kind of yellow journalism that the major radio stations in the capital of Port-au-Prince are currently participating in. Right now, people are very scared. They're very angry, but they also remain resolute. They're very clear that they are willing to die and sacrifice their lives for this constitutional government to continue. And if it doesn't continue, believe you me, this is not over by a long shot. Haiti has a long history of coup d'etats. We know there's been 32 over the last 100-year period during Haiti's history. We know that the first democratic transition in the history of the country occurred with the passage of power from President Aristide to René Préval and from René Préval back to President Aristide. It's a question of establishing democratic traditions in this country. And what is the best way to do that? By allowing an opposition that's been built by Washington and by Paris to overthrow this government. First, they attempted it by political means. When those political means didn't work, now enters FRAP, the former paramilitary death squads trained by the CIA, the Front for Advancement and Progress in Haiti, and the former military in the guise of Guy Philippe, who's a former U.S.-trained military officer in the Haitian Army, the former chief of police of Cape Haitien, the second largest city in Haiti. What is the best way to guarantee democratic traditions in this country? Is it to allow these former killers and murderers to enter the capital and to commit atrocities again? Or is it to stay the course and to allow Haiti to build democratic traditions, whatever the faults that his opponents have leveled against him? And a lot of them are surrealists, and a lot of this has involved the corporate media, who've continued to repeat a lot of things that the opposition has created here, and a lot of things that the Haitian press has helped to create here. And it's not a question of me making this up. I've been documenting that. That's been my work here in Haiti. I record the major radio stations every day. So I have the tapes. You know, I can show you innumerable examples of people being allowed to make unsubstantiated claims against the government, major radio stations playing them, and the effect and the ripple that it's had in Haiti. A recent example is that Evans Paul, one of the leaders of the opposition, and Lydia Clark-Ferrand, another leader of the opposition within the Democratic Convergence, just yesterday had stated that President Aristide had resigned and already left the country, and that they were merely negotiating which country he would be allowed to be returned to. Right now I have a helicopter flying over me. It is a U.S. military helicopter. It's not quite clear where it's going, but there is a U.S. military presence in Haiti right now. There are two of them, excuse me, two U.S. military helicopters flying directly over me. They are U.S. Marine military helicopters. It's not quite clear where they're going, but they are here.
We're speaking to Kevin Pena, an independent journalist in Port-au-Prince, describing the scene right now, saying there are two U.S. military helicopters above him. Just before speaking with Kevin Pena, we have been speaking with the First Lady of Haiti, Mildred Aristide, who is inside the palace. We turn now to Congressmember John Conyers, who joins us from Michigan. We welcome you to this Pacifica Radio special, Haiti in Crisis. Welcome, Congressmember Conyers.
Time right now, and I'm glad you're doing this kind of media service, Ms. Goodman. It's something that's invaluable. I don't know of anyone else doing it in the world.
Can you tell us, first let's hear from Kevin Pena. I heard him yell for a moment. Kevin, are you still there?
Yes, there are four U.S. military helicopters. I can quite clearly identify them as Marine helicopters. They're circling above me right now. It's not quite clear exactly where they're headed, but they are here, and it is heavily armed. Those four military helicopters are heavily armed.
As Kevin describes what he is seeing on the ground in Port-au-Prince, Congressmember Conyers, can you tell us what you are being told by the Bush administration? The Congressional Black Caucus met with Bush this week. What do you understand is happening at this point?
Well, we met with the president, the Secretary of State, and the security advisor. The whole point was that we urged that there be some kind of statement immediately coming forth from the president indicating his wanting to see a nonviolent resolution of the problems and to ask people to put away their weapons and help restore order. Then we wanted to make sure that the United States did not subscribe to the theory that we had to get a political solution before security could be sent in, which could be too late since maintaining peace and order would seem to need to precede any political resolution of differences between at least some of the parties. The fact of the matter is that there are operatives and organizations there that do not want peace, that do want violence. They do want to physically overthrow the existing government in Haiti.
Congressmember Conyers, as we speak to you, I want to check back with Kevin Pena on the ground in Port-au-Prince. Kevin, what are you seeing right now?
I'm seeing several U.S. Marine helicopters circling where I currently am. I'm not quite clear. I'm going to go down in about five. You can hear them now passing right over by.
Yes.
They're quite clearly U.S. Marine helicopters. It's not quite clear what's going on. I'm going to descend to the National Palace right now.
And we were hearing reports today that there were something like 1,000 Marines already on the ground in Port-au-Prince, but then we're told this was a disinformation campaign, that there were some 50 that were there to protect the U.S. Embassy. What do you say?
At that time, that was true. At that time, that was true. This is an entirely different ballgame right now. You can hear them right now in the background.
Yes, we can hear them. This
is clearly identified. They're U.S. Marine military helicopters flying over above.
Are they going towards the National Palace?
No, it's not quite clear where they're going at this moment, but they are here.
Kevin Pena on the ground in Port-au-Prince. We're speaking to Congressmember John Conyers. You have written a letter, Congressmember Conyers, to Secretary Ridge, urging him to use his authority under the provisions of Section 244 of the Immigration and Nationality Act to designate the Republic of Haiti for temporary protected status. What does that mean?
There he is.
Let's go back to Kevin for a moment. Kevin?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello. I'm sorry. Ask that again.
You just said they're here?
Yeah. We're watching many, many more helicopters enter Haitian airspace at this moment.
How many more?
I've counted four so far. But they are quite clearly doing a maneuver right now over the Capitol. It's not quite clear what's going on at this moment. I wish I could say more. I really can't.
Well, we'll continue.
Until I can go down to a vantage point to see what's happening, I cannot give you more information.
Stay on the line with us.
There are crowds in the streets cheering.
Stay on the line with us and keep moving towards where you're trying to go and where you're trying to see more clearly what's happening. As Congressmember Conyers, if you could explain what you're asking of the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Tom Ridge.
We're trying to get our government to use every means possible to give every support to a beleaguered democratic government in the Western Hemisphere, only miles from our own shore. And that is one of the ways that we can do it. Another way would be to form a humanitarian corridor, which would be bringing in much-needed food, supplies, and medical equipment to the citizens of that country, and that they would have to be accompanied by people who would be prepared to protect and deliver that equipment. We're also trying to get the, we thought we were in an agreement with the French ambassador and the Canadian ambassador to raise the issue in the Security Council. We also have a meeting with the Secretary of the United Nations on Monday. And we're also considering massive demonstrations in front of the White House in support of 8 million people of color who are standing helpless before gangs and thugs and drug lords and predators of every kind while we stand idly by. Now, maybe these helicopters are a prelude to a different scenario.
We're talking to Congressmember Conyers, who has appealed, among others, to the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Tom Ridge, to invoke or designate the Republic of Haiti for temporary protected status. This is a Pacifica Radio special, Haiti in Crisis. Kevin Pena, let's touch base with you again in Port-au-Prince, observing at least four military, U.S. military helicopters overhead in the Capitol for the first time.
The opposition is reporting on the telephone over the radio that this is a contingent of U.S. military to evacuate him from the country. However, the president just made a statement on the radio that is not the truth. in fact that an agreement has been reached for a resolution of the crisis in Haiti.
Repeat that one more time so we can understand exactly who you're referring to. First, you said...
The opposition in Haiti, the Democratic Convergence, along with the Group 184, Andy Op-Ed and Evans Paul, were announcing that these are helicopters that are here to evacuate the president, that he has just resigned. The president has stated that this is not the case, that an agreement to the crisis has been reached, which may not involve the opposition.
And the president speaking from the National Palace?
That's correct.
Any more helicopters?
Speaking through one of his advisors. Yes, listen.
Kevin Pena speaking to us from Port-au-Prince, Haiti. We get the idea as you were describing it. We heard the helicopters more before.
It's very unclear. I want to be clear. It's very unclear what the situation is. There are contradictory accounts that are being told about what this means. We won't know until tomorrow, until the situation evolves clearly, exactly what this means. I can tell you that they continue to circle the Capitol right now. They're here.
And
it is a show of force,
You continue to monitor what happens, and let me ask Congressmember Conyers, the Bush administration believes the best way to avoid an armed rebel takeover in Haiti, this according to a report just out, is for the president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, to resign and transfer power to his constitutional successor, according to an unnamed senior U.S. official. Your response to that, Congressmember Conyers, for the first time saying at the highest levels they want him out.
That was never brought up and, of course, would have been vigorously rejected by all the members of the caucus that were in the White House the day before yesterday. And so I am shocked to read that Colin Powell had said since we met with him that he thought that for the best interests of the country of Haiti that the president remove himself by resignation, which again he and the president and Dr. Rice knew would be very strenuously objected to, because we have the simple proposition in front of us that a democratic country cannot be idly watched to go down in flames by critics, marauders, gangs, as if there were nothing we could or should do about it.
Congressmember Conyers speaking to us from Michigan. Kevin Pena, independent journalist on the ground in Port-au-Prince as this program is being broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Kevin, what are you seeing now?
Can I tell you a scoop? The scoop is that it's not confirmed, but that the Venezuelan government may have offered unilateral assistance to the Haitian government, and that has pressed the U.S. hand in Haiti. Venezuelan government may have offered unilateral assistance under the Rio Treaty and under the democratic treaty that was signed under the OAS recently, the Democratic Charter, that the Venezuelan government may have offered direct military assistance to the Haitian government, and this may have forced the U.S. hand. That is not confirmed, but I have several sources who are telling me that now.
And what would unilateral assistance mean?
It would mean the landing of Venezuelan troops on Haitian soil under the provisions of the Rio Treaty and the Democratic Charter of the OAS. A fellow government asking for unilateral assistance to protect a constitutional democracy in the hemisphere.
Kevin Pena on the line with us. And how do you know, how do you have come to believe that this is the case?
People who are close to the Venezuelan embassy here in Haiti, as well as people who are close to the Venezuelan ambassador in Washington, D.C.
What we were hearing about Venezuela in the last few days is it would be possibly a place of asylum for President Aristide.
Absolutely out of the question. President Aristide has no plan of resigning. He's made it clear that he's willing to die in his country.
Congressmember Conyers, can you make some sense of this? This is, if true, a surprise development.
Well, we know that the French had 4,000 to 5,000 troops nearby that they thought that with some support they would be willing to do what is what perhaps may be going on in terms of Venezuelan military. And we had heard that Venezuela was one of the countries that felt strongly sympathetic to the preservation of a democratic form of government in Haiti, and that, there ought to be something that nations that support democratic processes would be able to do. And so it's not inconsistent with what I had been hearing.
We're talking with Congressmember Conyers, who is one of the longest reigning Congress members in Congress, also part of the Congressional Black Delegation, the Congressional Black Caucus, who met with President Bush, deeply concerned about the situation in Haiti. Kevin Pena on the line with us from Port-au-Prince has just seen at least four U.S. military helicopters come in and has put forward the idea that possibly, and maybe you can explain this, because we also have Michael Ratner on the line with us, the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, and I want to hear him. I want him to hear what you have just laid out, Kevin Pena, to comment on this and the significance of this.
Yeah, I actually heard Kevin, and it's extraordinary news and a scoop that remarkable. I got to tell you, tears started rolling down my eyes. If it's true that actually someone is coming, Venezuela, to Haiti's aid. Let's see what happens now, because it does put the United States in an incredible position. Kevin is right about the Rio Treaty. What that basically allows is for a country within this hemisphere to ask for the aid of another country, as well as the OAS agreement, to protect democracy. That's a democracy that, of course, as everybody who now has listened to your show knows, that the U.S. has done everything not to protect, and in fact is itself probably deeply involved in undermining. So it's an incredible move. And the question is, what will the United States do now? Will they actually try and prevent Venezuela from coming to help out the democracy and Jean-Bertrand Aristide? Will they actually begin to fight? Are they being maybe put in a position where they actually have to defend that democracy rather than let Venezuela come in and defend it? It would be hard to believe. They may just say to Venezuela, keep out or we'll kill you. It remains to see what will happen, but it shows every contradiction of the United States position. Here's a country with the populist leader, Chavez, coming to the aid of another country that is trying to be overthrown by the United States, the very country, of course, Venezuela, that a few months ago the U.S. had a hand in trying to overthrow. An incredible act of solidarity, one that just really brings tears to my eyes.
Kevin Pena, have you heard anything else on the ground in Port-au-Prince?
At this point, I'm just watching these military helicopters circle. I have to get myself down to the palace. I need to ask people what's going on exactly. As I said, I cannot confirm what I said, but very, very reliable sources have indicated to me that that was the case, and that is possibly why the U.S. is now being forced to play its hand in Haiti, because they would not like Venezuelan troops to land here to give unilateral assistance. Remember, these are the only two popular democratic governments in the hemisphere. They obviously stand in solidarity with one another. President Hugo Chavez himself has openly accused the CIA of trying to undermine his government, of trying to overthrow his democratically elected government. I believe that from what people are telling me, that this was an act of solidarity, because he believes that the same is in action to Haiti today. The ones who are the losers is Paris, is France, because obviously they have tried to play the Francophile, the Francophone card here in Haiti. They have given tremendous support and backup, tremendous financial assistance to the opposition. They are the great losers if indeed this is the case in Haiti today.
We have just been joined by Congressmember Maxine Waters, who, together with Congressmember Conyers, went to the White House and met with President Bush. I don't know if she heard the latest news from Kevin Pena, who, again, has not confirmed this, but does believe it might be that Venezuela said it would send in its own troops to help another nation in trouble in the hemisphere, that is Haiti, and that that might have forced the hand of the United States, which is why Kevin Pena is now seeing U.S. military helicopters overhead in Port-au-Prince. But Congressmember Maxine Waters, can you tell us what you understand at this point?
Well, I don't know about, I'm glad to hear it, because I did hear the conversation where he talked about the connection between Venezuela, Haiti, and Cuba. And it's very, very clear to those of us who watch our government and its relationship to the small countries in this hemisphere and in the Caribbean, that this administration wishes to get rid of these leaders in these three countries who don't cry uncle, people who are not puppets of our government, people who are responsible for creating popular movements. I absolutely agree. And this Haiti policy, as a matter of fact, I have a discussion on in a paper that I just read today that was sent to me where Mr. Noriega gave a speech. And this is basically what he described in so many words, that these were the three countries that they were focused on in terms of their brand of democracy. So I hope and pray that Venezuela is prepared to send some help to our National Police Force. I hope that is true. I do know that the United States supposedly has some ships off the shores of Haiti there, but that's supposed to be to keep the people, Haitians, from getting up to Florida and to other places. That's to put the immigrant. I'm so upset about all of this. Anyhow,
the Haitian refugees, to prevent Haitian refugees from leaving Haiti.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, let's check back with Kevin Pena right now if he has learned anything else in these last minutes of this national broadcast, Pacifica's program, Haiti in Crisis. Kevin, what do you know at this point?
Hello.
Hi, Kevin. What do you understand at this point? Have you learned anything else?
No, I'm still, these helicopters just disappeared into the horizon. I have to make my way down to the National Palace. I have to say goodbye. I obviously have a lot of work ahead of me to figure out exactly what this means.
Well, I thank you very much for being with us, Kevin Pena, independent journalist, reporting to us on the ground in Port-au-Prince, laying out a theory that perhaps Venezuela had offered aid to Haiti, and that the United States, forcing the hand of the United States. Again, this has not been proven. Kevin Pena saying that the opposition was saying that the military was moving in to evacuate Aristide, and the president saying he is not going anywhere. Maxine Waters, Congressmember from Los Angeles, has just made reference to the refugees and the fact that she believed the U.S. military moving in thousands of soldiers on the coast and the Marines in a mission off the coast of Haiti. Could you, Michael Ratner, who dealt very much with the refugees on Guantanamo from 91 to 94 during the coup, can you just reference for a moment what this means, why the U.S. is so concerned about these refugees and the significance of President Bush saying that they would not allow any refugees to leave Haiti. In fact, in the last 24 hours, U.S. has repatriated more than 500 fleeing Haitians.
During the last coup, Amy, tens of thousands of refugees tried to flee Haiti. The United States in the beginning took a few in, after that picked them up on the high seas, sent them back to Haiti without any refugee processing at all to determine whether they'd be killed, prosecuted, or tortured when they were sent back to Haiti. That's, of course, completely illegal, utterly illegal. You can't send anyone back to their place of prosecution. The United States obviously is concerned, because what could really undercut their whole coup policy in Haiti is refugees in Florida, a state Bush has to take for the presidency. He doesn't want to see them land there. The United States is obviously willing to expend thousands of soldiers in boats to be able to stop them, and basically is willing to have people killed, really, to get Bush reelected. That's what this is about. There's no doubt about it. I think those soldiers are probably not just there for that. I think they obviously know about Venezuela starting to come in, and those soldiers are there. If it's a true rumor that we're hearing, those soldiers are there to tell Venezuela, you better not do this, or you're going to have a war with the United States. You know, or they're there basically after this coup is finally over, which is to say after Aristide is removed one way or another, according to the United States plan, the U.S. troops will come in there and make peace, supposedly, and probably knock out some of the thugs that they basically put in there to knock out Aristide. So those troops, I think, have more than a refugee purpose. They're probably there to intimidate Venezuela as well as figure out what to do after the U.S.-run coup is finished.
Congressmember Maxine Waters, it seems that the Congressional Black Caucus is taking the lead on this issue. We are hearing very few number of other Congress members addressing this. Can you talk about that?
Yes, we do have some other members who have been working with us, like Jan Schakowsky and Mr. Delahunt. But basically, this is an issue that must be taken care of by us, because really, Congress does not care about Haiti. And Congress has been led for so long by the Haiti haters, like Mr. Goss and Jesse Hems, and they have been spouting their venom for years, and they use their power to malign Haiti in any way that they possibly can. Half of the members believe whatever they're told, and they don't care enough to, you know, put time on it, to do investigation. We can't get them to hold hearings on this issue. And so because of that, the Congressional Black Caucus must take a lead. We must do everything that we can in order to try and save Haiti and save this democratically elected president.
Congressmember Conyers, how is the administration telling you that they will inform you about what is happening right now? And are you encouraging people in this country? What are you saying to people is the most effective thing to do at this point?
Is to write the president and bring ourselves to the White House to let him know, and the members of Congress and Senate know that they should join with all of us that believe that democracy is in serious danger in this hemisphere, and that we cannot stand idly by and watch and hope that someone else will do what is clearly our responsibility.
So they can fax and email and call the
exactly.
State Department and Colin Powell and the president. We got to get the voices up there, letting them know that people know what's going on, and we want to save this impending bloodbath. Want to stop it.
And we're using this telephone number as a office for everybody that wants to be up on where we are and what we're doing. And if I may give it to you now, I will.
Yes, go ahead.
202-225-5126. And we want to tell people and give them an hourly report. Thank goodness for the Amy Goodmans of the world, if there are any others, in media that will bring this, the truth, eyewitness report, riveting, about how we in the caucus and in the Congress are determined not to let these 8 million people have their government ravaged by the negative forces in that country.
Well, Congressmembers John Conyers, as well as Maxine Waters and Michael Ratner, President of the Center for Constitutional Rights, we want to thank you for joining us. And I also want to let the stations know around the country that we will continue to keep listeners updated through the weekend. Check the KU updates as we continue to monitor Haiti in crisis. Democracy Now! Special with Pacifica Radio today, produced by Jeremy Scahill. A very special thanks to Mike DeFilippo. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Is it for freedom or a comfort and convenience? Is it a profit for big business? We pledge our allegiance.